Following is a one-minute introduction, which will be followed by the treatment. To find out about the founding of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, which was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright, please navigate to the menu, which is in the top left corner of every page, and select About, which is near the bottom of the menu. If you would like to contact us in a private, secure manner, please send a message which is obtained from clicking on the Contact button, which is next to the About selection at the bottom area of the menu. This is the end of the introduction. The extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute follows. The topic of this Mary Baker Eddy Institute extemporaneous treatment is Conviction, Truth Prevails. The very first step in treating any problem is to recognize that we must move out of the dimension, whatever the dimension is, where the problem appeared. Einstein states, you cannot solve a problem if you work in the same dimension, the same level, as where the problem appeared. Mary Baker Eddy stated on page 146 that she had reduced divine metaphysics to a system. And on page 330, she gives us 32 topics, which she calls planks, and those are required to be learned and practiced in order to be able to demonstrate divine metaphysics. In other words, to solve the problem. And we must know and practice both the letter and the spirit. The letter, of course, are the 32 planks, the entire system, and the spirit is the atmosphere of our thought. Love is the only atmosphere that is sufficient and is the only one that is totally, completely, wholesomely effective. So we have to have both. We have to know how the system operates, and we need to do everything in the atmosphere of love. Jesus demonstrated in all of his work that the atmosphere of love means you have to depersonalize every single thing. Only think about ideas. Only think about the perfection of ideas. Only think about giving, not taking. For example, cultivating a life of giving is the very first step in preparing to heal. If we don't take the first step, there's no use getting started. We've given some ideas on the website on how one has many assets, many resources from which to draw that can be shared. If you really put yourself to work contemplating this you will come up with a myriad number of items that would be practicing a life of giving. As with anything and everything in any good treatment, the thought has to be open to receive the angel messages from God. If one has gained any healing in Christian Science, they have at least a degree of conviction that truth works, that truth really heals. In other words, the truth about God and man being God's image and likeness, that moves everything from anything less than perfection into the realm of perfection. Obviously, that's where we want to be in the end, but we may have to go lower than where we are to find out the problem. Once we strive to get our thought in the right atmosphere, then what are the facts that we're looking for? Mary Baker Eddy feels that understanding truth is so important that she gave us a quotation from Jesus which discusses it in a short phrase, and it is on the wall of many Christian Science churches. It states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Know means to understand. It means having a conviction, because you can't really understand something unless you've tested it at least to some degree. And if you've never had a healing of any kind, it is highly recommended that you read chapter 18 of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with the Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy, because there are 100 pages of testimonies which all have been verified, and there are a total of 486 divided by 85 people, each one having something a little less than 6 healings apiece. And this was one group of healings that all occurred together. And in most cases, they were working on healing one problem, but because healing is the result of alignment with truth, as well as the other qualities of God, which are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and love, that makes the 7 synonymous terms along with truth. And when we align our consciousness with those 7 terms, the qualities of God, the character of God, then we automatically gain the benefit of God's perfection. All we have to do in order to be reflecting the perfection of God in all thought, speech, and action is to gain the conviction that truth is real and error is unreal. Mind that is of divine source, not mortal, but divine mind is true, and a so-called mortal mind, which is really an oxymoron, is untrue. that spirit is true and matter is false, that spiritual sense is true and material sense is false, that divine principle is true and a chaos is untrue, that spiritual life is true and a so-called material sense of life is false, that spiritual truth is true and material truth is a trick, that spiritual love is true but sensuous materialistic love is a trick, untrue, unreal. We also need to understand the four operators. Just like in mathematics, it has the 10 digits, and it has add, subtract, multiply, and divide as the operators. You need to apply the operators to the digits in order to gain a product, which in terms of mathematics is a healing. In other words, the result. You've solved the problem. In the system of divine metaphysics, there are also four operators. They are termed the Word, which means understanding what God is, the Christ, which means being able to translate whatever is visible into the truth about the situation, which means you are then going to the invisible, which are ideas and qualities. I mean, you can't see a quality. You can see the effect of a quality, but you can't see the quality itself. It's like the roots are underneath the surface, and you know they have to be there because the tree is there. So when there's a result, you know there has to be truth there, but it's not something you can see. You can see the effect of it, but you can't see the roots because they're below the surface. But they're certainly existing, and you have a comprehension to some degree, or you would not be able to experience a healing. And that's exactly what step number three is, or the third operator, and that is Christianity, which is demonstrating your knowledge about what God is and coupling that with the translation that is the Christ, which is the second operator. And if you have adequate understanding of those two and you're living them in your life, that means you are utilizing a consciousness that is at a high level with every thought, speech, and action. And you reject anything unlike God. You don't give it any kind of entertainment in your thought at all, ever. It is a multiple of times easier to prevent the wrong kind of thought to be accepted and then have to clean it out than it is to close the door of your consciousness and not permit it to enter at the beginning, at the onset of the suggestion. Wentworth Winslow describes it as us being in a room and there's a telephone ringing its head off, trying to get our attention to put suggestions of evil into our thought, and evil is anything less than God. And the difference between that and a radio that is tuned into station KOG that is constantly just announcing the qualities of God. And of course, that's obviously what we want to give 100% of our attention to if we're listening to anything. We must be aware of and practice the proper way to learn, and listening is not the most effective way to learn by itself. if we utilize what we hear, contemplate it, put it into our own words, record it, then we're getting into the correct way to learn. Because the Mary Baker Eddy Institute has found that the most effective way to learn is to read the original text of truth, record it as you read it, or even better, is to read it and contemplate it. And when you feel you have an inkling of understanding, then you record it. And you record it in an individualized way also. In other words, you record the original text exactly the way it is written by the author. And then you contemplate it, put it into your own words, and record in your own words what it means to you, and listen to that recording. So you need to be totally aware of the value of listening to the original text in your own voice, which means you recorded it, which means you're utilizing more of your senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. And the more senses you use, the better opportunity it is to learn and remember. A very tiny, tiny decimal is remembered unless there is some kind of a dramatic event that accompanies what it is that you desire to remember. The normal facility of a so-called human for remembering functions based on association. Therefore, the more interesting the association, the more likelihood that it will be remembered. Reading something in a rote manner or hearing something in a passive manner are both about the same, and the likelihood of remembering it is close to zero. If one was having an extremely difficult time and one received assistance in solving that, they would remember that event without any rehearsal. It would probably never be forgotten. And the more severe the situation, the more likelihood that it would be remembered under those circumstances, meaning never forgotten. But only a small amount of one's life, in terms of calendar time, 1,440 minutes a day, could ever be associated with that kind of a severe situation. So we have to create the circumstance by utilizing as many senses as possible of the seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling in order to give us the greatest opportunity of benefiting on a permanent basis. And the voice is one of the most effective ways to do that And that means our own voice, I'm talking about, which is recording it, because recording it requires, if you really record it, and I don't mean just read it, but I'm talking about really think about it as you're reading it and really getting a pretty good understanding of what it's talking about before you even record the original words. But if you do it in that fashion, then it will really mean so much more. And of course, it is amplified by a multiple when you change the words to be your own words with your highest understanding of what the meaning is intended by the author. If you can teach it, you will remember it because you have learned more about it. You can't teach something that you know nothing about. You're a very poor teacher if you just open the textbook and have students in a class. It could be anything, any topic at all. Music, mathematics, physical education, history, English, any topic at all. If you just have the student open the textbook at any level, doesn't matter whether you're kindergarten or you're teaching students working on their PhD or postgraduate work, post-PhD work, research, for example. Just reading something or listening to a student read something to the class has very little effect. But if a student from that class would go home, and let's say they recorded it, or they have the original text that they can take home, and then if they work with that text themselves, they bring in an entirely new dimension of learning, understanding, and remembering. Now, we explain all of this in detail on the website under a topic called Heal Everything. And that's available from the header, which is the top part of every page. And it's on every page of the website. And we have hundreds and hundreds of pages. So no matter what page you're on, the header is going to be there. And if you click on Heal Everything, you will see an index, which will then give you detailed instructions on exactly how to do it. In other words, advance your thought to the level where you can heal any problem. It doesn't matter what it's called. They're all the same. Every problem is really the same. It is a suggestion of something that is untrue about the real man, which is the reflection of the one and only real God. And that's your goal, to be able to learn more about God and his manifestation called man. And man is a generic term, so it applies to female, male, and at all so-called ages, from birth, whatever, to infinity. The early people discussed in the Bible lived to be up to 900 plus years old. If we desire to have results by advancing our spiritual understanding, which will automatically result in healing, then we have to have the conviction of truth and know that it always prevails. God's clock may be different than ours, because God's clock synchronizes everything together and brings forth healing. And it doesn't mean a person of a God. It means God's laws. When we sync with God's laws, then everything syncs. I'm talking about synchronization, not S-I-N-K, meaning fails. And that's exactly what happened in the chapter 18, which is the last chapter of the textbook, wherein there were 486 healings from only 85 people. Almost six healings apiece. They were working on one problem, but they had a healing of everything that was wrong. They weren't even thinking about them. They may have been an annoyance, but it wasn't the primary thing that they were trying to solve. But it was solved. Everything was solved. And you'll read in the testimonies time and time again, one testifier after another, the same story. And you also find that when they weren't thinking about the problem and they weren't checking on it in one way or another, the more they forgot about the problem, the faster the healing came. Because if you're thinking about a problem, you cannot simultaneously think about the solution. It's one or the other. Am I going to spend this moment thinking about the problem, or this moment thinking about spiritual advancement of my consciousness? Not thinking about solving the problem, thinking about getting closer to God. Thinking about understanding that the communication is directly from God to man. The truth is what heals. And the more understanding about truth, and that means the truth about God and God's, or which includes, not and, but includes God's manifestation, which is you and me and everyone else in all existence. Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment of all? He gave them two, but had an indelible connection. He said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Like. In other words, they're connected. Love your neighbor as yourself. Mary Baker Eddy makes it very clear that you cannot love God unless you are loving His image and likeness. Because the image and likeness, to material sense, is visible. And you cannot begin to love the invisible unless you can love the visible, which is a symbol of the invisible, an idea of the invisible. The impersonal nature of God expressed as a man, woman, or child. You can't do it, because they're in conflict with each other. If you have a sour feeling about someone, you can't love God. It's impossible. Because that is the image of God. If you have a sour feeling about someone, you have a sour feeling about the source. Because the image is a direct reflection of the source. Now, how do we get rid of the sour feeling about the reflection? They may have done something really, really bad in our opinion. I lived next door to a woman one time, and I went over there to introduce myself because my wife and I lived in a home that had about 3 acres, and it was a lovely pasture which was perfect for animals like horses. And the fence was in disrepair when we moved in. And since it was a common fence between us and the neighbor, I thought maybe instead of us just putting up a new fence or repairing it, they may appreciate having the common area between our properties to be repaired and painted or replaced or whatever, and they may feel justified in sharing the cost. So I went over to be neighborly and introduce myself to her. My wife didn't happen to go along. And as soon as I met her, she lived by herself. As soon as I met her, she started talking about her daughter. About how her daughter had really made some bad mistakes and she couldn't forget it. She said, "I've forgiven her, but I'll never forget." Can we forgive and remember the problem? We have to go to the root of the problem, believing that life, truth, and intelligence is in matter. That man is a mortal being. That he was born a sinner. That we are the progeny of Adam and Eve. That we got all kinds of problems to work out of all the time. Now, if our thought is occupied with that, it's going to be a real big truck full of garbage that we're pulling, carrying around with us all the time. We're going to be too tired from pulling that big load of garbage to be thinking about the freshness and the newness of life that is given to us by God. Because we're God's reflection of life. Energetic. The inspiration of truth. The enlightenment of spirit that brings forth fresh ideas. The ideas come from mind, but spirit brings them forth. Because spirit is the substance. It's impossible for us to heal anything if we're going to think about the problem and that there's no way that it can be healed. Frederick L. Rosen is one of the greatest geniuses of all time, next to Mary Baker Eddy, in Christian Science healing. He discovered how to go back in time and heal. He wrote a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, which discusses 1,315 different problems. And Mary Baker Eddy says we need to find the root of the problem and we have to discover the exact opposite, which is the truth that heals it. And he gave us 1,315 of those listing both the problem and the solution. Genius work he did. And everything was a result of prayer treatment. The whole book, L1315 items. We have to root it out. We have to clean it out. We have to go to the root of the problem and dig up the root, expose it to the light. We have to drain the swamp, get rid of all the scuzzy mold and all that kind of stuff. We have to have pure water. We have to have pureness of the entire atmosphere in our thought, our consciousness. Wentworth Winslow, this was back before they had international telephones, received a wire, a telegram, that said, 6 treatments, please. It had the continent, South America. And it probably had the name of the individual sending it. But that was all it said. 6 treatments, please. How do you think he approached that as the practitioner that was contracted to assist in the healing? How do you think he approached that? Well, think about the synonymous terms for God. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Mind is anything to do with the mental. Spirit is anything to do with substance. Soul is anything to do with identifying. Principle is anything to do with structure and system. Life is anything to do with living the qualities of God. Truth is staying on track so that we don't take 2 steps forward and 1 back. And the last one is love. Love means nurturing it like a mother, bringing it to fulfillment. Now, spirit being substance cannot have the flaws of matter, cannot have any flaws whatsoever. None. If it had any flaws, it wouldn't be spirit, it would be matter. So he thought about each of the 7 synonymous terms for God, and the one that seemed to be the most important for a direct focus was spirit, because of what was mentioned here about it being flawless. So the only thing that he could do, in his view of how he assessed the situation, and remember, he didn't know anything about what the problem was. But the only thing that he thought he could do was to consciously think about every single thing he did and made sure that it was reflecting spirit with a capital S, meaning God, and meaning substance. He nurtured the quality of spirit in every direction he could think of with every thought, every speech, and every action. No exceptions. About a week later, he received another telegram, and it said, 6 more treatments, please. Again, no communication on what it was about or how to do it or why they wanted more or whatever. Whether it was a belief of heredity or something that just occurred. All of the things that normally an individual would want to disclose to a practitioner was absent. And I don't know that it does really any good at all to disclose details to a practitioner. Because I asked a very successful, long-time practitioner, how does she conduct a treatment? And she said, when I receive a phone call, the individual wants to talk, not just name the problem with a short phrase, but they want to talk. Any details that seem to be surrounding it and whatever. She said, in her work, she felt it was important not to cut them off, but to let them go ahead and talk about it. And when they were done and the phone call was over, she said the very first thing that she had to do was to try to clean out every morsel. In fact, not just try, she had to do it. Clean out every morsel of detail about the problem. If anyone listening to this recording utilizes a practitioner, that would be wise to keep in mind. Because the less we talk, the better it is. Jesus said we should try to confine our conversation to yea, yea, nay, nay. Now, if he was trying to teach, that's a different story. He would have them on the hillside for many, many hours, such that his disciples felt that he should make provision for them to eat. And not only if we're going to go to a practitioner, think about ourselves, our own consciousness. How much of it do we want to permit to be occupied by details of the problem? Recall what Mr. Winslow said about the telephone and the radio. He said, don't pick it up. Don't listen to the details about a suggestion. Refuted at the very beginning that it could have any reality or any effect on you or anyone else in all existence because it didn't come from God. The Bible makes it very clear that God is omnipresent. And that presence does not include a single morsel of evil. None. Nada. Nothing. God couldn't be both spirit, which is flawless, and its opposite, which is all flaws. Mortal mind, so-called, is the source of trying to convince one that they have a big problem. A professor walked into his class one day with a big white sheet that had a little dot in the epicenter of it. And he asked his students what do they see? When they said they saw a big white sheet, he said, look carefully. And then they noticed the little black dot. He said, that's what you want us to see and focus on. He said very clearly, the big white sheet is the big picture. It's white because it's pure. The little black dot is black because it's all dirt. He said, you have to be aware that there's a problem to solve. But that can't be a focus. Mary Baker Eddy responded to a letter from one of her students that said she had a problem on vision and didn't seem to be able to heal it. And Mary Baker Eddy said, are you able to focus no matter what comes your way? Mary Baker Eddy was talking about the first quote in the textbook. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Free of anything less than truth. We can't dwell on error and expect to be able to focus on truth. It's one or the other. Same with love and hate. One or the other. Same with every one of God's qualities. No mixture. We have to think about the spiritual nature of every one of God's qualities. And since God is spirit and spirit is the only substance, that means every one of God's qualities must be reflecting the flawless nature of its substance. Intelligence has to be flawless. That's a part of mind. Our seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. We can't be looking for problems because that's letting it into consciousness. The structure of our very being can't be made up of matter or we have a problem. We have to be focusing on spirit as the substance of everything. Our life, it better be spiritual. Our concept of difference between right and wrong, which is truth or error. We can't focus on 7 times 8 being equal to 86 when it should be 15. And love cannot be a sensual infatuation. We have to be pure in everything we think, say, and do. Pure. Spirit, not matter. Perfection, not imperfection. Well, finally, Mr. Winslow was able to have communication with the individual. And the fellow that hired him said the healing was totally effective. And he said, I asked you for the first 6 treatments to heal the case. And I asked for the second 6 treatments because no one believed the case was healed. The evidence pointed to it being healed, but they couldn't believe it. And the case was about an individual that was insane. Mary Baker Eddy said that that's one of the easiest ones to heal because Christian Science is all about the mental. So healing insanity is one of the easier cases to heal. Because when you're looking for a healing You're looking for purification of consciousness. So his purification touched on mind being spirit and not matter. Every quality was of the substance of spirit and not matter. The fellow was in Brazil. Mr. Winslow was in New York. Distance was not a problem. Practitioners overcome the belief of distance probably in every case. We have to be thinking about what is true about anyone involved in the problem. Think of being involved in a negotiation. If you desire it to be a long-lasting success, then you have to make sure that every party is totally satisfied. That's only when it's going to be a lasting success. When they get finished with making the deal, however many different parties there are involved, no matter what the topic is, it could be an investment in real estate, or it could be a relationship between yourself and your wife or your husband if you're a woman, or children. It could be a teacher that's causing a problem at school. It could be anything. If you're in business, it could be an employee or many employees. It could be a union that is representing the employees and trying to cause nothing but trouble. It could be anything. It doesn't matter what the topic is, what the situation is, how long it has been going on. None of that has anything to do with truth. Because truth is pure. Because it's of the substance of spirit. The only thing that has any impact on whether or not there's going to be a healing is what is being entertained in consciousness. And that includes the cause and the effect. And Mary Baker Eddy says we have to find the cause to belief, expose it, and explain it away with the exact truth that is applicable to that particular problem. And that's why the book by Frederick L. Rosten is so valuable. Because that's exactly what he provides for 1,315 different kinds of problems. God is all there is. There is nothing else. Because God is omnipresent. How could anything else exist? There may be an appearance that tries to trick us that something false is real. Chaos is real. An accident is real. A broken arm is real. Any kind of a dis-ease is all in the same category. It didn't come from God. Therefore, it cannot be real. If it cannot be real, we have to declare it to ourselves and convince our thought that it doesn't matter what appears. We have to stick to the truth. If you want to develop a conviction of truth, you have to fill consciousness with truth. Devote your time and effort to learning more about God. Learn about the seven synonymous terms. Learn about the four operators and the four levels, which are on page 115 and 116 of the textbook. You will find that three of the levels are considered the first, second, and third degree of mortal mind. And the first degree is the lowest, called depravity. And the second and third are proportionably higher. And then the top is God. And that's immortal mind. So there are 3 degrees of mortal mind and 1 degree of immortal mind. And so wherever we are, we have to go to probably a lower level to find the root cause. And we must also remember that what appears to be the cause is often not the cause. Let's suppose you're in a business and you're going to a very important meeting. Could be anything, about anything, for any reason, whatever. But it's a very important meeting, and it's important for you to be there for the success of the meeting. Suppose you have a problem with your mode of transportation. Whatever it is, could be a plane, the flight is canceled or delayed, could be a vehicle that you're driving, anything. It could be that you're in a freeway mess. It could be anything at all. The first thing you want to do is try to get a higher view. You could say, I want the 35,000-foot view. That's a common elevation above Earth that jets fly, passenger planes, if they're going any distance. You want that view. Now, if you raise your thought to a higher level than what is appearing to be the problem, then you'll be able to more easily think about what could be the real cause. Is it really that you're having trouble with transportation, whether it's a delay or a problem with the vehicle or whatever it is? Or is it something that is trying to prevent the meeting from taking place? We have to decide. And we have to take action and attack our best judgment on what the real problem is. If it's something that's trying to prevent the meeting, there's no use thinking about trying to heal the transportation problem, because you have to think about it at a different level, a different dimension, as Einstein refers to it. You got to be on a different level than where the problem appeared. So don't try to solve the transportation problem, if that's what it is in this example, because that's not what the real problem is. The problem is something is trying to prevent that meeting from taking place or causing a delay for it that may cause other problems. I'm only giving you a hypothetical example to try to point out that our focus needs to be on whatever level that it needs to be to make sure that we're not myopic in our viewpoint. If we have a conviction that truth will prevail, and that conviction can come about from various ways, as mentioned, it could be you reading about testimonies of other people that have overcome the same problem. It could be that you have had healings and have discovered that truth is effective. And that mind is effective as the medicine. Like Shakespeare says, nothing either good or bad, but the thinking makes it so. Mary Baker Eddy says that we are barraged all day long with suggestions of mortal mind. And that we need to form in thought a perfect model and stick to it. So that is what gets our attention and not be diverted by what appears to be invisible form, the real problem that may not be the real problem at all. The only reason to try to advance our life spiritually is so that we can deepen and broaden our conviction, so that when anything comes up, we are instantly prepared to, number one, refute that it can be real, that it can be affecting God's idea, which is you and me, or whatever event is involved, or whatever group, whether it's individual, collective, or universal. We have to know that there's only one power, only one source, only one manifestation, which is totally comprehensive of everything that exists. And it includes us. We have to be aware that Genesis 1, starting with verse 26, says that God said, "Let us make man in our image and after our likeness." And then it says, "And God made man in his image and after his likeness." So we had to open our consciousness first of all. And also we have to understand what I or us is. And I or us is defined in the glossary as being mind. It says mind is the only I or us. But on an individual level, we have to open our consciousness to the real mind, the divine mind, the one that is flawless, the one that is the big white sheet, and not keep it focused on a little black dot. We have to be convinced, we have to have the conviction that there is nothing that has power that is less than perfect God. And that includes God's perfect manifestation, which includes everyone, everything, all the time. And the only time there really is now. What we're thinking about now is the only thing we have to be concerned with. Forget the past. Don't try to be concerned about the future. Take care of this moment. And moment is defined as the smallest measurement of time. Mary Baker Eddy says, infinite progression is concrete being. And she quotes Isaiah as the introductory quote to chapter 14, wherein Isaiah says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy makes it very clear that we are not to be concerned about the future, but right now. And just get a little morsel of truth clear in your thought right now. And that gives us the conviction. If we don't understand it, we keep feeding it in there, knowing it will be effective. And eventually we will get a better clarification in our own thought about the proper meaning of whatever it is that we're trying to understand more clearly. It is repetition. Utilizing the spiritual senses of soul that will enable us to remember what we need to remember at the right moment. And if you follow our procedure under Heal Everything, you will get an increasing understanding, which will give you an increasing level of conviction that the truth always prevails. Always. And don't give it an inch. We have a substantial presentation on our website right now that says, never give up, never give in, never quit, and so forth. And John Greenleaf Whittier, a very wonderful poet, provided the world a poem about that very topic. Don't quit. And it's on our homepage right now. Well, a little bit of it is, with a link to the complete text of it. And of course, the present president of the United States has been using that as a theme for his whole life. He has put up some of the most beautiful properties in the world, which includes hotels and condominiums and golf courses. And he has done it, as I mentioned, around the world. And imagine what he had to deal with. He had to deal with different languages, different cultures, different sets of rules and circumstances and laws. He had every variable in the book that he had to overcome. No wonder he has an attitude of never give up. If he didn't have that kind of an attitude, now every project he has is a wholesome project. It provides the finest service to the public, and it's constantly given the top award that is voted on by the ones who use the services as being the best. So his reputation for the quality of everything that he has produced in his business and has available to the public is the best. And he says the more important the project is, the more resistance there is to keep it from coming to fruition. Error mocks truth. It tries to parallel it as much as possible, but of course it is evil and truth is good. So it relies on deceit, trickery, deception, illusion, fantasy, you name it. But it sure tries to look like the truth. So we have to be sure that we're dealing with the right cause of whatever problem we're having in order to be able to dig it up, expose it, and it will destroy itself mostly, and we just have to kind of do a little cleanup work. The problem is finding the error and focusing so we don't dilute our attention and that we don't let it be deflected in any way or stopped or reversed. That is our duty if we're going to follow truth, if we're going to follow mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and love, as well as truth. And we have to nurture everything, which is the motherhood qualities of everyone, nurturing. And we have to have the strength, which is the man qualities of everything, the perseverance. We have to have the innocence of a child so that our motive is pure. We have to be receptive, which again is the qualities of a child. We have to be forgiving if we think that someone else has made a big blunder. It's like a dog. A dog is the king of forgiveness. And children as well. Jesus loved little children because they were so innocent and so receptive. They loved the truth. We can develop a conviction that truth always prevails if we have a desire, a strong desire to improve who? Everyone else? Or the one we see when we look in the mirror. We start, focus on, and finish with the one we see in the mirror. The first thing the practitioner told me, she said she has to get rid of all of the details that the individual told them in the telephone call, and she has to clean everything out of her own consciousness about that kind of a problem, whatever it is. She grows with every healing that takes place because she's building a greater conviction of truth in her own consciousness. Mary Baker Eddy, in her class, in her metaphysical college, which endured for many years and ended in 1898, in her final class, every student was individually invited to attend that class, the final one, by her. And on the third day, she assigned them to go out and perform a healing. Of course, it was really truth that was performing the healing, and it was medicine of mind that was being applied, the real mind, not mortal mind, but the real divine mind. And they all came back with a success, every one of them, in 3 days. After 3 days of getting the clarification, of course, as I said, they were all filtered before they were permitted to enter the class. Didn't say how much experience they had, because obviously she'd have to have a write of 3 books probably to explain it. I don't even know how many were in the class. I don't recall that she ever disclosed that. But we have to go through the same thing. And we have class notes from that class. It's a 6-volume set. And we can tell you how to get it. We don't sell it, but we tell you how you can obtain it, and we can provide the PDF copies when you buy the set from the publishers. Conviction that truth prevails. So she named these prayer treatments, and she did 7 of them, one for each of the 7 synonymous terms for God. And she named them the diapason of heaven. And I will close this prayer treatment with one of those 7. And I will recite it to you right now. And after that, the only thing I do is mention the date and time of this recording. So if you ever need to know for sure, and we also put that in the title. But that will be the end of this extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. So here is the diapason of heaven by Mary Baker Eddy for one of the 7. The thought occurred that the title, Conviction That Truth Prevails, relates very well with the diapason of heaven for principle. And principle is structure and system, which means everything always has to be in balance and harmonious. So I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven for Principle by Mary Baker Eddy, as she provided it to her class in 1898 to her most advanced students. We must hallow this word principle as a name for God. Declare often there is only one principle, and this is my infinite, all-present, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-acting, all-loving principle. Principle is my God, and my God is divine principle. Good is my principle, and my principle is good. Divine principle is enthroned in my consciousness as my God. Persons and personal sense are not enthroned. This is the Word of God. Declare all the truths you know about principle. Principle as God must be subjective in your consciousness. Claim this revealed principle as yours and as your subjective thought. This ever operative, unvarying, enduring, governing, exhaustless, sustaining principle is enthroned. So-called mortal laws are inoperative and unreal. Amen. It is 25/07/25, Friday at 11:34. And this has been an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute on the topic of conviction that truth always prevails. Thank you for listening. The end.